RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
The government has decided to make it harder for Māori to make customary claims on coastlines. And this, well, these proposed changes involve amending Section 58 of the 2011 Marine and Coastal Area Act, which requires groups to prove exclusive use and occupation from 1840 to present without substantial interruption. A recent Court of Appeal ruling had, the government says, lowered the threshold, allowing groups to claim customary marine title if they had enough control to exclude others, even if the law had previously prevented them. We thought we'd get Muriel Newman back on the program from the New Zealand Centre for Political Research. Muriel, welcome back to RCR. Thanks for coming back on.
Thank you, Paul. It's nice to be here.
All right. What do you make of this then? Were you in Parliament when the original bill was passed?
No. I'd left Parliament in 2005 and the bill through in 2010, and then obviously it was passed into law in 2011. But we were involved right at that time because we felt it was a very bad move by the National Government, which of course did it to satisfy their Māori Party coalition partner. And, you know, the whole process was flawed right from the start, from the minister who was Chris Finlayson at the time, and the Prime Minister saying, you know, we're going to public consultation. If the public aren't happy with what we're planning, we won't go ahead. And of course, the submissions came out overwhelmingly opposed to any change that would take the foreshore and seabed out of Crown ownership, which, you know, where it was held on behalf of all New Zealanders. And the government looked at the submissions and decided to go ahead anyway. So it's been a fraught process right from the beginning. And if you remember, there was a 7-year deadline for claims to be submitted. And up until the eve of the 7 years, there were, you know, maybe 20 or 30 or 40 claims had been submitted. And we sort of felt, well, maybe the law wasn't too bad after all. And then on the eve of the deadline, another almost 600 claims came flooding in. And wow. That essentially was the start of the problem. And it's just gone downhill since then, Paul. The law was drafted in such a way that the gaining a customary marine title, which is akin to ownership of the coast, you've got to remember that this is a substantial power and control that is given to successful claimants. To gain customary marine title, they had to prove, as you said, exclusive ownership and control since 1840. And what happened was that the first judge in the first major case under the law saw that in that same clause where that exclusive use and occupation test is, there's another part to it which says that the claimants must have held their area according to tikanga. And so what he did, which was to the horror of us all, he decided that the tikanga requirement trumped everything else. And so essentially, all the claimants had to do was say, you know, yes, of course we held it according to tikanga. And so they all essentially, not quite all, but almost all of them essentially were awarded a customary marine title in a patch of coast. We were led to believe there would be none. So then what we did was we took the case or appealed that High Court case because we joined the cases in the public interest, because we were aware that hardly anybody would actually be opposing them. So we thought, well, you know, let's in the public interest, let's raise some money and let's oppose them. And so we took that finding by the High Court, which essentially, as I said, gave customary marine title over the whole area, was a 40 stretch of coastline near Opotiki, and right out to the edge of the 12 nautical mile territorial sea limit. And so we appealed that to the Court of Appeal and asked the Court of Appeal to do what Parliament intended, which was, number one, to say, you know, tick yes, they held it according to tikanga, And then number two, did they have exclusive use and occupation since 1840? Exclusive meaning, you know, on their own, not with anyone else, and being able to theoretically chase off other people. And the Court of Appeal, in their wisdom, said, oh, we see what Parliament intended, but look, if we did that, then hardly anybody would be successful in these claims. So, no, we're going to ignore that, and we're going to lower the bar to make sure that more claimants succeed. And so that's what happened, and it was at that stage that everybody was pretty outraged.
That's not the role of a court.
No. Well, this was the problem. And so at that stage, of course, there was a lot of New Zealanders extremely concerned who then started lobbying, you know, flat out politicians to say, you know, look, there's an election coming up, and one of the things you have to do is you have to have a look at this Marine and Coastal Area Act, because where it was heading, the whole of the coastline would end up being controlled by various Maori groups. And that was never, ever the intention of the original law. So, yeah, it's been a fraught journey.
The role or the concept of tikanga coming into law, as we know it, it seems to be coming in from every angle. How do we explain this in our judiciary? I know we've asked people this question before, but here it is again. Here it is again.
Yeah. In this case, you can put the blame fairly and squarely at the feet of the National Party and Chris Finlayson, who was the minister in charge of the drafting the law and putting it through Parliament. And during the submissions on the law, there were many, many New Zealanders who said, you know, do not have tikanga in the law. Because remember, we're going back to 2010, 2011. So this was way early on, and we could see that no one knew what tikanga actually meant. And so what it did was bring in this huge uncertainty into a law that was, you know, pretty extreme, really. When you think of a country, what country gives away its foreshore and seabed, its territorial sea, for goodness sake? You know, hardly anybody. Normally countries protect those areas as in the public interest and the national interest. And so here they were bringing in this Maori custom as law. And so we warned it would be a dreadful thing to do. And so it played out. It's been awful. And this is what we're really worried about, though, Paul, because so now National or the Coalition has said they're going to amend the law, and we say good on them for doing that, because it has had to be done, really, given that the courts had interpreted it wrongly from what was originally intended. But now, of course, we're worried that if they don't take tikanga out of the new law, then it will simply be misinterpreted by activist judges again, and we could end up in the same situation. So it's a very, very important issue, a very fraught issue, and one that we do hope that the government sees fit to fix properly so that it cannot be misinterpreted.
So it was purely a political move to begin with, really? Just a convenient political move at the time, was it?
I think that it was quite possibly part of the deal that National was doing with the Maori Party. So if you remember, you know, they were in coalition, and so the Maori Party would have had a lot to do with the drafting of the law, given it was essentially, you know, their policy. And so it was quite possible, it could have been that National wasn't comfortable with it, but the Maori Party might have put their foot down. Who knows? We never did find out why it was in there, but it was well ahead of its time, really. And, of course, at the beginning, nobody really understood whether there was any damage from it being there, because it hadn't really been tested in the way that it was when that first High Court case was held. And then all of a sudden, when you read the judgment of Judge Churchman, and he essentially said that customary law trumps Western property rights, which was the, if you think of a clause, was two bits, the tikanga at the top and the Western property exclusive use and occupation provision at the bottom, then essentially he said that the tikanga trumps the other. And so all of a sudden you had a law where the key requirement was this exclusive use and occupation since 1840 to show that, in fact, you know, the foreshore and seabed essentially had been used by your ancestors since that time in a way that said they dominated the area.
Exclusive, yeah.
But all of a sudden, that went out the window. And there was another thing he did, and I'm really hoping, again, that the new law change will address this one as well. The Judge Churchman, he was concerned because when all these 600 claims came flooding in, they weren't for little segments of the coast. They were all for the same areas, overlapping multiple times. And so for any particular patch of coast, you've got several different tribal groups who all say, no, we had exclusive use and occupation of that area. And someone else will say, no, it wasn't you, it was us. And you've got all these different tribal groups all claiming they all had exclusive use and occupation of the area. And so what Judge Churchman did, he said, oh, well, look, you know, what we should do is we should bring in a Canadian idea, because in Canada, they looked at stuff like this and they decided that the exclusive could mean shared. And so he brought in the concept of shared exclusivity. So in other words, if you think of think of Takapuna Beach, just for example, because people can probably picture that. If you think of an area like that, that everybody knows, and everybody knows that, you know, everyone else has used it since 1840, since it was, you know, the area was first settled, then under the law as it stood before it was, you know, before it's going to be changed by the government, then it is quite likely that several different tribal claimants will all say, no, we own that exclusively, even though the history of it would show generations of settlers and everyone else all using the area. They would say, no, we had it exclusively. And maybe there's 10 different groups all claiming that. And so under the idea of shared exclusivity, all 10 tribal claimants could get customary marine title for Takapuna Beach to be shared.
Well, that could never work.
No. And the fact that everyone else has used it from day one doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't alter anything. And so the law was just, had become a dog. That's all there is to it. It was terrible. And yet, so what we did, of course, was we took the Court of Appeal decision, and now we're appealing that to the Supreme Court. We knew the law change, the government had promised a law change, but you don't know the timing on any of these things. So we took the precaution of appealing the Court of Appeal decision to the Supreme Court. But given that some of the justices of the Supreme Court have made a great play of suggesting that tikanga should be part of New Zealand's common law, we really don't have much confidence that they will do what we think they're meant to do, which is to interpret the law as Parliament intended. So the whole thing's a mess. The activism has taken over the justice system. And I don't know what the government is going to do about it, but they have to do something, because the rule of law under this sort of a regime means nothing. And look, there's another thing that should be raised here. And that is that, you know, I don't know whether New Zealanders realise, but the claimants all can claim up to $500,000 in essentially legal aid to fund their cases. This has been another outrage, because we as a group working in the public interest, I had to go out there and raise all of the money to run these two cases, one in the High Court and one in the Court of Appeal. And as you can imagine, that is, you know, a pretty expensive process. And so we had to raise the money. But meanwhile, the claimants, they all just put their hand out, and taxpayers funded the bigger claims, almost up to $500,000, not quite, about $458,000. And the smaller claims were a bit less. And then they got money on top of that for appeals. And now what's happened is that the government has looked at, there was one claim, by the way, which was due to be held, I think, starting next month, off the coast of Whangarei for the whole of the coastline. And there was something like, I think, 16 different groups, tribal groups were involved. Well, you can imagine the army of lawyers that would be associated with that. And the case was estimated that it would cost $17 million. One case. And, of course, there's hundreds of them.
Wow. The Justice Minister, Paul Goldsmith, says the law is being changed because, can't wait, the court process could be too slow. What he's really saying, by the sounds of things, is we don't quite, is the word trust, the justice system to interpret what we would know as the common sense law. I'm not a lawyer, I don't know the term, because of this tikanga factor. And it's loosey-goosey, like you've just said. So really, that's what he's saying, ultimately, isn't he? He kind of doesn't trust the judiciary, even though the original thing is loosely worded, to fall on the sensible side of any decision-making. Do you think?
No, I totally agree with you, because, and we've got proof of that now, because in the High Court, our argument, our submission to the judge was that you have to do what Parliament intended, which means you have to ensure they had exclusive use and occupation, which would have ruled out all the competing claimants, all the overlapping claimants. And the judge ignored that. And then we went to the Court of Appeal and said the same. And as I said in their judgment, they said, we're not going to do what Parliament intended because no one will win. No one will get, their patch of coast. And so we're going to go the other way. So given that you've got two courts in New Zealand who have not done the right thing, done what Parliament intended, the government, I think, is completely justified in saying we can't risk, given it's our foreshore and seabed, and the whole country, every New Zealander's got an interest in this, and our whole territorial sea, we cannot leave it to the whim of another court who may go the same way, because the pattern's already been established. They're being very pro-tikanga. They're being anti, property right values that are in a law like that. And so they've said, no, we need to clarify it. We need to tighten it up. In fact, they need to do what they should have done at the beginning, to be honest. And now we're all back to square one. So we are going to have to consider whether or not we have to take one of the cases and object to customary title if we think that's a valid thing to do, and take it through the High Court again to make sure that this time we end up with an outcome that is reasonable, because that's all we're asking. We just want a reasonable outcome based on the law and based on our knowledge. And remember, the minister at the time said he expected no more than 10% of the coastline to end up being controlled by Maori. But the way it was going to be 100%. And that's where we had to do something and had to get somebody to step in, and that's what they've done. In fact, if National had the right of New Zealand or the best interests of New Zealand at heart, what they would have done is said, no, we're going to repeal our law and go back to the 2004 Foreshore and Seabed Act, because then it was held in Crown ownership on behalf of everyone. Maori, non-Maori, everybody. And that's where it should be.
Muriel Newman, thanks for coming back on RCR. Absolutely fascinating. Thank you for drawing on your knowledge and your involvement in this, as we've become apparent in our chat. I think our listeners will appreciate that, and it'll give them a good kind of overview as this plays out.
Thank you for having me, Paul.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.